Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We have a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes, from setting a post or pouring a walkway to installing concrete block or natural stone. We've got the mix you need in stock today. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Warning, the Book of Proverbs says you shouldn't listen to people of my gender, but fuck that book.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Prostate Farm Anal Virginity Single Prayer Health Insurance, where you can bet your ass that we'll pay your claim. Are you worried about the rectal risk of sending your children to church but still insist on sending them to church? Are you afraid they might turn the other cheek in the wrong way? Well, then let Prostate Farm cover your ass. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
Because when the Foundation for Freedom from Religion goes around the country trying to stop prayer in city council meetings and school board meetings, they are not simply human beings who disagree with us. It is demonic power moving to shut down the power of God that comes through prayer.
This is Sean from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men. Now, let's hear it for Opposable Thumbs.
It's Thursday. It's May 29th.
And whole milk is still clearly better.
I'm No Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright. And from the city nicknamed after the fruit that brought you gravity, New York, New York.
And the state nicknamed after the one that looks like an ass, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
And a pussy a little bit. On this week's episode, redneck preachers getting bit by poisonous snakes will get so common we don't even bother to cover it in the headlines.
God will punish me for that time I had that abortion.
And Lucinda will join us to discuss Proverbs in this week's Oprah's Book Club.
But first, the diatribe. So I've got an analogy for you. Imagine you've got an aunt named Millie, and you were close to her when you were a kid, but in the last decade you've run into her once at a wedding or something. And now imagine that Aunt Millie dies, but your cousin Bob, who is Millie's only child, decides that he doesn't want you to go through all the grief of losing your beloved aunt, so he doesn't tell you she died, ever. In fact, he goes out of his way to mislead you. You know, he makes excuses for why she never shows up at family reunions. He tells you she doesn't answer her phone anymore because she's convinced it'll give her cancer. He even sends you Christmas cards with her signature forged onto them, all in an effort to keep you from grieving. So the question is Bob doing you a favor? Now, before you answer this, let me add another layer to it. Imagine that after a while, the charade gets so wacky that you're on the phone with Bob and you're saying something like, wait a minute, she went back to pan more gold in Brazil even after the Ocelot attack? And it suddenly occurs to you that Bob just might be full of shit. So you start having doubts and you ask him point blank, Bob, is Aunt Millie dead? But even then, he keeps lying. It doesn't matter how elaborate or half-assed his answers get, he keeps up the act. So I'll ask you again, is Bob doing you a favor? And I'll also interrupt you again before you have the chance to answer, because to be thorough, I need to add one more layer to this analogy. Because Bob has to be getting something out of it for himself. So now imagine that up until now, every year you send Aunt Millie a really nice present on her birthday and on Christmas, and then Bob goes and sells the gifts on eBay and pockets the money. He justifies it by telling himself that he works really hard to keep you from grieving, and it's a small price to ask for all this effort. Now, I don't need to ask you again, because even before I started adding all the layers to it, you already knew that Bob was being an asshole. A well-meaning asshole maybe at first, but an asshole nonetheless. It's not for him to decide if you can handle Aunt Millie's death, right? He's robbed you of your ability to grieve for her. What's worse, he's taken away the quintessential reminder of the impermanence of the people that we love. You know, what if knowing about Aunt Millie's death would have driven you closer to Uncle Paul and Aunt Gretchen? What if you'd have otherwise been inspired to start a charity in her name or take care of her favorite dog or just live in the comfort of knowing that she was never going to break into your house again and molest your ferret? Whatever. Doesn't matter. Look, if we want to spread atheism, we need to confront the issue of death. And not only do we need to confront it, we need to embrace it. We need to fall in love with mortality and sell it. Of course, if you have no interest in spreading atheism, feel free to disregard everything I'm saying. You're under no obligation to devangelize. But if that's your goal, you need to find ways to help people put away this immortal security blanket. Because when we say, your religion is stupid, what they hear is, that hope that you'll see your favorite dog and your grandma and the son you lost to leukemia is stupid. Now, I don't think that means that we should stop saying their religion is stupid, because the idea that you're going to see your dog and your grandma and your kid is stupid, but we need to understand why so many people are so scared to agree. One way we can do this is by pointing out that religion doesn't actually help you grieve, but the other is to help people understand that mortality is a good thing. It's the greatest motivating factor on the planet. It's the only reason we sometimes have to forgive and to reconcile. You know, obviously we can't offer them life in paradise for eternity with virgins and mansions and shit, because we're limited to the truth. But it's like Sam Harris says, when you learned that, spoiler alert, Santa Claus wasn't real, the truth that replaced it was nowhere near as fun, but at least there was a truth to replace it. We can't afford to avoid this topic. So think about all the people that you love that you plan on outliving. And next time you say goodbye to them, try to remind yourself that this could be the last time. And the next time you say hello to them after that, try to treat them like they just returned from the dead. You know, that's something that you can only do if you let go of the afterlife. You know, when we keep mortality in the front of our minds instead of burying it behind religion and superstition and pithy bravado. Imagine how beautiful the world would be and how stupid our interpersonal quarrels would be if we would all just admit that we're all going to die.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is Stickler with a smartphone, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to share that latest fact bomb victory?
You must be referring to how I snopes the shit out of some guy at the bar the other day.
That's correct.
He's trying to impress this woman, talking about how he's a scientist. He used the general term scientist, so already suspect. And then he mentioned he was a devout Christian and loved how science coincides with the Bible. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know those rabbits and their cud.
Exactly. So I absolutely could not let him go when he started talking about how glass is actually a liquid, and they discovered this by looking at the window panes at cathedrals that were thicker on the bottom. So, first of all, no, it's a solid. I mean, it's technically an amorphous solid, but you didn't even know that, so it doesn't count. It has a melting point, so it's clearly not a liquid. Things that have a melting point can't be a liquid.
Well, right, but it's as if it wasn't wrong enough already. The whole thing about the cathedral windows being thicker at the bottom is bullshit anyway.
Right.
So even if we grant him the bullshit on both sides of his bullshit equation, it's still bullshit.
Yeah, and I'm not granting it, so it's even worse bullshit.
That's
in our lead story tonight from the Shady Antebellum File. Reginald Wayne Miller, president and founder of the totally real-sounding Cathedral Bible College in South Carolina, was placed under house arrest after receiving charges of felony-level slavery and exploitation. Now,
is there misdemeanor-level slavery?
I would assume. just like small, light to medium slavery.
You know, normally I'm against slavery and stuff, but I guess at a certain point you've got to do some really crazy shit to stand out in the religious world. I mean, you got to picture Reggie sitting around, he's thinking, fucking kids has been done to death. You know, the Vatican has money laundering, the Pentecostals have the snake fellatio, the Muslims have throwing acid on innocent women. What about slavery? Is anybody still doing slavery?
Wow, really? Baby, slavery is taken. What about regular slavery? Yeah, shotgun, whip, I call it. Yeah, Miller's legal defense team plans to argue that the Bible and the Free Exercise Clause justify the slavery and exploitation.
They do.
The prosecution, on the other hand, plans to argue that the Bible and the Free Exercise Clause justify slavery and exploitation. So those clearly don't count, right? You can't use those to justify things.
Now, the most fucked up thing, if these allegations are true, and they almost certainly are because this dude's white, there wasn't even an actual college here. You know, he sets up this faux school for the express purpose of bringing exchange students over, putting them to work for between $1.15 an hour and nothing an hour, and revoking the student visas of the kids that complained.
This is like now, a Jack Reacher villain.
Right, yeah. And now I have to point this out because according to biblical apologists, there's like good slavery and bad slavery. So I wanted you to know we're dealing with, in this case, bad slavery.
Right. Felony level.
Felony level. Like, well, yeah, you already covered that. And then I'll render unto whoever I want news tonight. A federal judge in Kentucky has ordered the secular nonprofit American Atheists to go fuck themselves this week by dismissing a lawsuit that sought to hold the IRS accountable for its prejudicial policies regarding churches. This is not a tax the churches suit, though I'd be every bit as much behind it if it was. Rather, this suit challenges the preferential treatment and lack of transparency that the IRS exclusively affords to religious nonprofits.
Oh, right. The single most important political issue on the atheist platform. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that one for a second. The hole we could plug and save billions in stolen tax revenue every year.
Right. Now, as is often the case in lawsuits like this, the question here is one of standing. Is American Atheist harmed by this policy? U.S. District Judge William O. Bertelsmann says no, and in a remarkable display of cognitive dissonance, he justifies it by pointing out that American Atheist might be able to gain classification as a religious organization.
So?
Right, that's like dismissing a racial discrimination suit on the basis of the plaintiff being pretty light-skinned for a black guy.
Dude, just lie about your heritage and learn to talk like this. You'll be fine. Case dismissed, dude.
Right.
And in the asshole doesn't fall far from the tree news, Senator Ted Cruz's father, Pastor Rafael Cruz, in his expert capacity as the sphincter tree in that analogy I just made, was a featured keynote speaker at a conservative political conference held by a certain society. I don't believe I have to mention its name. I will anyway. It's the Family Research Council.
All right. So we've got the dude who spawned self-identified proud wacko bird Ted, the UN is coming for the golf course's cruise.
That's the one.
He's speaking to a group of bigots on behalf of a hate group. I bet he said something poignant. Was it poignant? Did he say something poignant?
Well, I do not think that word means what you think it means. Here's Cruz the Elder's inconceivably poignant thesis. Ever since we stopped forcing Christianity on public school students, it's led to nothing but moral decay and teen pregnancy. Yeah. Now, no question 1963 was a tough year for many white Christians in the South. Bible study was out the door at public schools, and black people were in the door. Maybe not the same door, but, you know, baby steps. Pissed them off either way.
Yeah, who knows? In another 100 years, maybe they'll even desegregate the churches. wouldn't count on it, but...
One day. Now, the ensuing decade of moral decay must have been great. I don't doubt teen pregnancy numbers were high, but the teen parent numbers... It must have leveled off after Roe v. Wade. That was just like 9 years later. So it's all good. We did that for you. Irresponsible pregnant teens can get abortions now. You're welcome.
And in Didn't He Used to Run England news tonight, former celebrity Toni Braxton has scribbled a new autobiography in which she explains that her son's autism is almost certainly a punishment from God for having an abortion.
Well...
Strangely, she didn't comment on what God was punishing her son for by giving him a mother that's such a horrible bitch that she would publicly describe her children as retribution.
She is an awful bitch. Now, the dude you're thinking of, though, by the way, who used to be king of England, pretty sure that's Margaret Thatcher, right? Pretty sure that's Margaret Thatcher.
How American of you. Now, I know it's hard to believe that something this stupid could come from the inimitable wordsmith that penned such brilliant lyrics as... oh, baby, I can hardly wait to see your face. Oh, baby, heartbreak is gonna be the case.
Well, it technically rhymed. That's something.
Now, Braxton walked back the comments amid a firestorm of criticism, saying, quote, when my youngest son was diagnosed with autism, I feared that I may be being punished for my earlier actions. I have since realized what a callous scut that makes me look like, so never mind. End quote.
You never know. The first kid could have had, like, Tourette's and autism or something. You dodged a bullet. I mean, it was hilarious for us. What a fucking goldmine that would be for us. But yeah. Okay, and finally tonight, atheist rappers Graydon Square and Tombstone the Deadman will perform in concert on July 26th in Temple Hills, Maryland, staging the event in collaboration with Grand Unified, a science-spreading artist collective.
Wait a minute. This cool. Seems more like a... like a calendar segment rather than a headline segment. Unless, of course, well, you were going to...
That is pretty much the whole story, true. So I could vamp for like 30 seconds here, and that could go downhill really quick. Or instead, we could spend that same amount of time listing ideas for the atheist and religious music festivals. Go.
Oh, good. I was afraid you were going to say rappers, and I'd have to reveal just how white I really was.
Yeah, dodge the ball.
We
got
like eight Beastie Boys puns or something. How about a Buddhist fest called Nirvanaroo?
Nice. Lots of big naked Buddhists with eightfold paths listening to Kalani DeFranco and Free Tibetan than Ezra. I don't know.
How about William Lane Craig could have an apologetics festival? He could call it South by Northwest.
Nice. Heard 50 Shekels and Kanye West Bank were going to be at Gathering of the Tribes. So Jewish joke.
50 Shekels, check. I love it. How about the Warped Logic Tour?
Well done. What about a Puritan Music Fest? Burning Woman at the Stake. Wanted to see Motley Crucifix, but we ended up getting stuck with a set of 3 9-inch nails. No fun.
You could do like a festival to raise money for secular education for women in Muslim countries. It could be called Malalapalooza.
Gotta assume there's already some kind of shitty loot fest slash hummus smash off called Halalapalooza going on in a desert somewhere. So,
well, I don't know. I believe there's no true festival but Alapalooza. So.
Oh, true, technically. And despite being completely irrelevant now, I'm sure they'll bring up Benghazi Osborne. Maybe the Arab gangster rap giants Sand NWA.
Damn.
By the way, ladies, be careful to avoid the acid at Alapalooza. Avoid the acid at Alapalooza. The acid at Alapalooza is
all right. Good. Well, now everyone that can be offended is, so I think we can close out the headlines for tonight. Heath, thanks as always.
Benghazi Osborne.
And when we come back, we'll learn that after Psalms, we can take just about anything.
The Holy Babel.
The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines a proverb as a brief, popular saying that gives advice about how people should live. But the biblical definition is more like a statement of indeterminate length that expresses a notion that is either common sense, true by merit of definition, or painfully, ridiculously wrong. Chocked full of important nuggets like the clever do things intelligently while the fools display folly, Proverbs does distinguish itself for being, at best, the least horrible book in the Bible so far.
It's basically a lucky famous person giving stupid advice because he confused covariance and causality like they always do. It's King Solomon explaining how if we all heed the Lord's wisdom, then everyone will become the extremely wealthy king of Israel, just like him. See, it works.
Right. So joining us to discuss a book that spends about 8% of its words warning us that we should never listen to women is a woman, specifically my lovely wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, welcome back.
I am woman. Hear me roar.
All right. So despite being recently told by an inerrant book that the true purpose of a wife is to make sure that I, quote, let your breasts satisfy me at all times, end quote, we're going to talk about the Bible instead for the moment. You mind starting us off?
Not at all. At first, I was thinking to myself, who named this fucking book? Alanis Morissette?
Right.
I mean, aren't Proverbs supposed to be short?
Yeah, and instead we get unnecessarily long restatements of the same thing over and over again. They're like converbs or amateur verbs or whatever.
These are ancient words of wisdom, and the very first one basically says, if a bunch of dudes invite you to go ambush and murder some innocent people with them, don't do that. So right there, right off the bat, Solomon really drops some insight on us. That's nice.
Yeah, and even when you shave it down to like one pithy sentence, it's still terrible advice. Chapter 2, for example, tells us as long as we fear God and seek wisdom,
which are mutually exclusive goals, by the way,
right, we'll never have to worry about having raunchy, sinful, naked time.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 3 teaches us that the true goals of wisdom should be living a really long time and getting really rich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Lean not on your own understanding. Do not be wise in your own eyes. And pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. So basically, don't let judgment cloud your judgment.
Yeah, something of a pattern really emerges right away. About 90% of the proverb is reminding you to pay attention to this proverb because it's really, really important. And then the other 10% vaguely tells you not to be wicked without ever really defining the word wicked for you.
I don't know. Chapter 5 is pretty on message. It says, beware of vaginas. So.
Right, but it also expressly endorses titty fucking.
Well, as long as you push in at the last sentence.
I want to point out that whoever wrote chapter 6 was very familiar with the price of a hooker, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, it was apparently a loaf of bread back then, so I guess the ancient world wasn't all bad.
These days, with Atkins, the entire meatloaf you got to bake, it's a pain in the ass. Also in this chapter, quote, there are 6 things the Lord hates, 7 that are detestable to him, end quote. So, weird fucking way to present a list of 7 things.
And this book is, like, so obsessed with who you do and don't fuck that at a certain point it reads like, you know, a dorky guy who's trying to explain why he never gets laid. Well, yeah, there was a bunch of hotties down at the square begging me to fuck them again last night, you know. They're all like, I perfume my bed with myrrh, aloe, and cinnamon. Come let us, you know, take our fill of love until morning. But yeah, I stayed righteous. I stayed righteous.
Be good Cheerios. I fucked this girl from Moab at camp last summer. You wouldn't know her, though. She lives a few tribes over. Don't try to get in touch with who or any of her friends or any.
But then in chapter 8, we meet God's wife, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, and apparently she's got a nice house and she invites stupid people in.
And then finally, after 9 chapters of, I swear I'm really smart and you should listen to me bullshit, we get some, I guess, actual proverbs is what these are.
Yeah, and apparently God sucks at proverbs. I mean, George Lucas wrote better wisdom than this.
Yeah, there's no puns, no rhymes, no wordplay of any kind. It's like a long, terrible, completely unclever version of Animaniacs' good idea, bad idea segment. Good idea, don't be a mocker. Bad idea, mock. Unforgettably eloquent stuff like that.
Right.
Genius.
13 has some really good advice on beating your children, by the way.
Yeah, the advice is, beat your children with a rod, specifically.
Right, but in case you didn't get that, they restate the pro-child beating case in chapters 19, 20, 23, and 29.
And also there's some good slave beating advice in 29 as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perhaps my favorite, though, is chapter 14, verse 20, which states, I shit you not, the poor are disliked even by their neighbors, but the rich have many friends. It's like the whole thing. Be rich and more people will like you.
Seems to be working for the Jews quite nicely ever since, though. Who doesn't like the Jews? They got all that gold.
You know, nice froze.
You know, there's a lot of focus on the wise people are smart, fools are stupid proverb, too. It's restated maybe 50 times in the first 15 chapters, I swear to God.
Yeah. I'm willing to say the tales of Solomon's wisdom are pretty exaggerated, yeah.
Yeah, but he was the king, so, like, who's going to argue? You know, just picture him, he's like, you know, in his room, gorging on a turkey leg and a virgin, yelling, Scribe, I have another one of those smart thingies for you. Write this down. Sometimes there's a way that seems to be right, but in the end, it is the way to death. Write that down. And put a little skull next to death so they really get to...
Shut up, virgin.
Even better, make the E in death a little skull. That would be awesome. Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
And he continues to be the inept minstrel guy that keeps missing the rhyme through the whole thing. Good is good and bad is bad. Evil stuff makes God real pissed. Shit! I suck! Such an idiot.
In 17...
Had that one. Mad. Mad would have been perfect. Or sad.
So many ways to go with that.
In 17, we learned that it's immoral to flog people for having integrity.
Yeah. And apparently living alone is wicked. Never realized that, but it is.
Well, I'm just going to throw an example out. Every morning, I take a naked shit with the door open while drinking milk from the carton. And then it gets ugly. So, didn't have a Google suggestion for you guys this week. Figured I'd just leave you with that. So, should suffice.
Thanks for that.
Good enough blue waffle.
Yeah.
But this thing is so boring that if you're not careful, you'll miss all the good blowjob jokes. For instance, after this enigmatic proverb that tells us that lazy people say that streets are filled with random lions, we get this gem, chapter 22, verse 14. The mouth of a loose woman is a deep pit. Yeah, baby.
Or a shallow pit, but it's really wide and stretched out on the edges. I don't judge. Whatever, you're studying, like a Lego piece. They also mentioned that you're not supposed to fuck with the property lines by moving ancient boundary stones. Maybe it wasn't clear on this earlier. I'm God, and I'm giving all the oil to the Jews in the future. So it's very important that they get to keep all this shitty-seeming desert land right here that I've marked off very clearly. Just whatever you do, don't give it to the Muslims.
And then we're back to the stupid shit like warnings that stingy people's bread will make you puke, and kids who don't get beaten regularly will burn in hell for eternity.
It also says that prostitutes are deep pits and adulteresses are narrow wells.
Really?
So apparently they're saying if you're going to fuck around, try to get the tighter vagina of an adulteress before settling on the whore. Oh, and by the way, and apparently this is very important. When you start eating honey, stop before you vomit.
If you vomit or hit the East River, you've gone too far. That's helpful.
Yeah, good thing God was around to inspire Solomon to tell Hezekiah to write this shit down for us, right?
Right. By chapter 26, they've entirely run out of shit to say and start repeating earlier proverbs verbatim.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, chapter 26 also has the Bible's first reference to dog vomit. So new shit sprinkled in there as well. That's nice.
And it's such a weird mix of shit, too. Like in 27, we get a bit of generally good advice about not being a dick to your friends. And then we close off with God telling you not to worry about the goat's milk because he's got that shit covered.
Right. And even the stuff that sounds wise isn't. Like 28:1, the wicked flee when no one pursueth. Mm-hmm. Right, but they also flee when people do pursueth, like by definition, because if they weren't fleeing, you couldn't pursue them. You'd just walk over to where they are, you know?
And righteous pitchfork mobs don't just walk over there, do they?
Right. So,
correctly anticipating a lynch mob attack and going somewhere else is wicked. That's what they're saying? That's what that proverb says?
Believe so. And sometimes it doesn't seem like they understand that the two clauses in a proverb should be at least tangentially related. 29:3 is a great example. A child who loves wisdom makes a parent glad, but to keep company with prostitutes is to squander one's substance.
What?
Right?
What? If you're not getting A's in school, you might as well be coming on a hooker's back. So useful, everyday false duality to guide your study habits and sperm darting behavior, I guess. So that's helpful. That's why we have the book. That's why we have the book. Sperm darting behavior.
In 30, we learn that if you disobey your parents, vultures will eat your brains.
King James, it's ravens plucking out your eyes and feeding them to eagles, but you know what?
Yeah, either or. And then after they finish this whole book, apparently King Lemuel shows up with a poem that his mom wrote and said, I want this in the book too, and I'm the king.
Yeah, the whole thing is a ridiculous stereotype of Jewish moms. It starts off where they're saying, don't drink too much, moves on to asking when he's going to find a nice Jewish girl to settle down with and have kids, and then it ends up by telling him how awesome he is, of course.
And then it mercifully ends 119 chapters earlier than Psalms did. And while it seems more like something that belongs in a book of wisdom than all this other crap, it did leave me wishing that God would go ahead and genocide somebody again or something. This book is getting boring even for this book.
Well, I just like to point out that in the NIV version, the book ends with an epilogue about a wife of noble character, mm-hmm. which is basically a list of shit that she has to do with a smile on her face. She may not be charming and she may not be pretty, but if she fears the Lord, you should praise her. Because apparently fear will make her get shit done quicker.
Yeah, and allow you to use her tits whenever you want to. Yeah, so that's going to do it for the Babel this week. We'll be back in 3 weeks with Ecclesiastes, which I hear is by far the least bad book in the Bible. So that one might be a little harder to make fun of, but I'm sure we'll make do.
When are we going to get to the part about the Messiah and Ara bitches?
Before we reach for the washcloth tonight, I wanted to congratulate a friend of mine on a pretty significant milestone. Carl from the Post-Rapture Looting Podcast is about to record his 100th episode. Among his many podcasting accolades is the fact that he was the first person to ever interview Heath and me about this show, so huge congrats to him on number 100, which I recommend you download and listen to when it's available, and not just because he invited us back on to temporarily join in the festivities. And that's all the blasphemy we've got for you this week, but we'll be back in 168 hours with the incomparable Eli Bosnick to discuss the new film Heaven Is For Real, so be sure to have your popcorn ready for that one. Until then, you can keep up with us on the blog, on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Google+. I need to thank Heath once more for always having 190 seconds to spare for a segment called 30 Seconds on the Clock. I need to thank Lucinda for powering through books of the Bible post-op, and of course, I need to thank Sean from Alberta for providing this week's Farnsworth quote and ukulele solo. But most of all, I need to thank this week's most bestest people in the whole wide world, David, Wally, Greg, Steve, Colin, Laura, Yoren, Troy, Jeff with a J, Sharpest One, Tammy, and Jeff with a G. David, Wally, and Greg, whose cocks are available by prescription only in the state of Georgia, Steve, Colin, and Laura, who are so intelligent that the next incarnation of personal communication devices might be referred to as Steve, Colin, and Laura phones, Yoren, Troy, and Jeff with a J, who are so legendary they named a planet, an ancient empire, and a Lebowski after them, respectively, and Sharpest One, Tammy, and Jeff with a G, whose intergalactically notorious ninjutsu solves the Fermi paradox. These 12 paradisaic paragons have helped us paralyze a few more paragraphs of paranoid parables from parasitic paranormalists this week by giving us money. Not everybody has the altruism, benevolence, and discretionary income needed to give us money, but if you'd like to join the ranks of our financial supporters. You can make a per-episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, or you can make a one-time donation by clicking the donate button on the right side of our homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you'd like to help, but you only like us as a friend, you can also help a ton by giving us a sterling review on iTunes, Stitcher, or the nearest church's bulletin board. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode, except Sean's ukulele bit, was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission and Sean's.
I haven't stopped it yet. Should I stop it?
Oh, neither have I yet. Yeah, I guess we should.